the OTB Podcast Network.
Well, Kenny, in Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's wildest dreams, could he have expected to win that derby as comfortably as Manchester United did?
In his wildest dreams, probably just about. I'm sure he may have envisaged the situation last night in terms of thinking, right, if we can get the defensive set up right, if everybody's absolutely at it, you know, that bank of four, the defensive unit, McTominay and Fred, if they're as good as I know they can be in those defensive areas, everybody puts a shift in, we keep our concentration, make good decisions, those type of things. Yeah, we can go and keep a clean sheet. I think once you can keep this Manchester United team, if you keep a clean sheet, you know the possibilities are that present themselves, particularly on the counter-attack with the qualities that they have. I wouldn't say that's exactly how the game panned out. You couldn't say the first goal was a classic counter-attacking goal by any shape or form. Came out of nowhere a little bit, didn't it? The nature of the goal was a bit odd. Still don't know why Jesus ended up on the edge of the penalty box. I'll have to rewind it 20 seconds before the back. Seems really strange. Manchester City centre-forward is chasing down Martial on the edge of the penalty box. Particularly when the two centre-half, because I've been in that position as a centre-half, you're in control, because see Stones and Diaz, they're looking at Martial, they're showing him across the penalty box, you're going nowhere, and then all of a sudden you see your number nine herding down the pitch, and you're thinking, oh God, here we go.
Did that goal just play exactly into Manchester United's hands? Because over the last 7 days, they've got an awful lot of stick from the performance against Chelsea, for their performances against the top six, as they're called, that they don't create enough chances, that they're happy to settle for the scoreless draws, that actually they could forget about that straight away because they had their goal. So actually they could revert to what they're very good at, which is setting up solid defensively and try and strike in the counter-attack.
Yeah. Well, don't buy into that. They're settled for score draws for a start. I think that's a ridiculous argument to make. I'd certainly settle for a clean sheet every week. Well, that's what every manager should aspire to do. I don't care if you're the most attack-minded manager in the world. You want to dominate possession. You want to play the beautiful game. What should motivate you as well during the week is actually keeping a clean sheet as well and setting up your team to that effect. Mentioned to Joe after the game there. I think that's a challenge for every manager in any league, in any country, in terms of getting that happy balance between offering a threat in attacking areas of the pitch, creating opportunities and scoring goals, but at the same time having a solid defensive platform to build from as well.
Are they a good team defensively?
I think they, Manchester United,
yeah.
I think they are, but I don't think it's necessarily because they have the best defenders and the best defensive unit. And I'm thinking about the two centre-halves in particular. I don't think that's the strongest pairing that I've seen, but I really like the way he kind of protects them, Solskjaer. He's got two fullbacks for me, probably the two best defensive fullbacks in the league, and that helps. If you have a small bit of vulnerability in the centre of defence, what do you need to do? Get two fullbacks in your team who can defend, who can narrow up to him and protect them, and get a barrier in front of them as well. Ideally, two central midfield players who understand how to defend, can stop balls getting played into the feet of centre-forwards who might cause those centre-halves trouble in 1v1 situation, who will screen things and who will actually protect them by saying to the two centre-halves, just stay in your area of the pitch and just defend the penalty box. You don't have to run behind because we're not going to charge up the pitch. You're going to protect the space. You can sit 10 yards outside our penalty box. Anything over the top, the keeper will come and deal with. So that's how you kind of, any kind of frailty in the centre defence.
But can United get to the next level having to give their central defence that much protection?
No, it's not the ideal. You can do. Manchester City have won titles with weaknesses in the centre defence. We've seen that under Guardiola in terms of some of the quality he's had to deal with at centre-halves, but it hasn't stopped them winning league titles. It stopped them winning from eight Champions leagues.
They never played, not that they were there at that time, but they would play Fernandinho as the holding player. They wouldn't play Fernandinho and a Rodri together.
Yeah.
So do United just need one great number six and that would suddenly free everything up?
No, it wouldn't free everything up. I think to play with a number six and two number eight, and what I mean by two numbers is two attacking midfielders. So for me to consistently commit to playing Pogba and Fernandes in the Manchester United team in those central areas, which are their two best positions and most effective positions where you want to see him play, for me, you need a top-class number six in terms of a defensive mentality. I'm not sure if they have that. I've still got my doubts about Fred. McTominay's not a natural holding midfield player, but he might be able to develop those traits. He shows enough in terms of his discipline. Can he develop into that type of player as a number six going forward? Potentially. But what they also need as well, Nathan, they need that rock-solid central defensive partnership, and they haven't got it. Manchester United need to throw players into forward areas of the pitch at times, knowing when teams counter-attack them, that their two centre-halves can defend in 1v1 situations in their own half the pitch. And I think most Manchester United fans accept when Manchester United, the likes of Maguire and Lindelof, find themselves in those 1v1 situations against centre-forwards of quality and pace, they kind of, you know, they're holding their fingers.
Yeah. Like, I've asked John Giles and Damien Delaney this week who that number six is, and they both came back with the same name. If you were Manchester United, if you were Manchester United,
it's always Franco Baresi,
and you're looking at making that signing this summer, who are you looking at? Who's the player who can come in and be that guy for them?
I think there's some fine centre-halves out there.
Is it a centre-half or is it a central holding midfielder?
Oh, both. I'd say both, ideally. If you're asking me, if I'm being fussy, what they need to do to really break into that top 11 terms is seriously challenge for the Premiership title and in Europe at the top competition, I'd say ideally both.
So who's the holding midfielder?
I think if you look at holding midfielders, if you say you look in the Premiership, for me, probably that type of player has been the most effective this season. I'd suggest probably Ndidi at Leicester. I'd say that's the type of player that you're talking about. Now, you can go abroad and look at a couple of players who are playing abroad, but I'm talking about that type of player in terms of athleticism, kind of physicality, and just a natural defender.
Yeah.
Fernandinho in his prime, that type of player.
With Declan Rice.
Yeah, Declan Rice. Yeah, I can understand that. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think Declan Rice. Yeah, I think that's a fair argument. So that's the type of player. That type of player for me, then you have a little bit more confidence in releasing Pogba and Fernandes into the team. Because once you do that, and you get Pogba and Fernandes in contact with that United front three, well, then forget it. Then you're going to see those stats in terms of chances created and goal scores go up and up and up. Because that front five for Manchester United, sometimes people talk about, well, you know, they haven't got a 30-goal strike, they'll never. Forget about the 30, 35-goal striker. All that matters is the final goals stat at the end
of
the
season. Like last season.
And that can come anywhere. So if you've got that, and I'm telling you, that front five for Manchester United, if they keep fit, can provide like 15, 20 goals each between them. And I'm including Pogba and Fernandes in that, from those kind of advanced central midfield positions. So that's the temptation to getting that top quality number 16 and that solid central defensive partnership. Now, there was a time not too long ago where the argument was, got to get a top class centre-half to play alongside Maguire. I'm not so sure at the moment. I think there's an argument there at the moment for saying, start again. They got to change them both. A top class centre-half alongside Maguire, even still, may not be good enough because of the kind of limitations Maguire has in terms of his athleticism. But I don't think that'll happen under Schultz. He's paid that amount of money for Maguire. I don't think he can turn away from him now. I think he's going to stick with him. So I think the best you can hope for there maybe is a top class centre-half to come in. Keep Lindelof in reserve as a number three. I think he's a good number three to have. Twanzebe there as well if you need him. Boye, I'm not sure you could carry Boye as well. So they're the key questions that I'm absolutely fascinated going forward. Is the money there to go and get these players? You're talking a serious amount of money, unless your recruitment's good and you can go and get players at a cheap price. It's still possible to do that, but probably unlikely. So that'll be interesting. They're the key areas, but they always have been. That's been the case all season, Nathan, with Manchester United. But I give him credit for the fact that those small weaknesses in the team that we're speaking about, Solskjaer, I think, and his coaching team have recognised that, and they're trying to shape up the team to negate for those small weaknesses in the team. And I think they're doing a pretty good job at the moment in doing that.
Luke Shaw has been one of the real success stories of this season, and he's a player who's taken an awful lot of stick over the last few years. Got his goal today.
From who?
From pundits, Kenny. Your type.
Really?
Your type. Well, it hasn't gone as well as expected during his time at Manchester United.
Yeah,
you don't agree?
No, I don't actually, to be honest with you. I don't. I never quite saw that massive drop off in terms of performance from
Luke Shaw.
Luke Shaw, yeah.
Why did they sign Telles then?
Well, competition and backup. But when he was getting that criticism, particularly from, I think it's Marino. Marino started this and he kind of created a kind of backstory around Shaw in terms of this kid is underachieved, he's not good enough, he's carrying away attitude problems, too many fizzy drinks, cola bottles. All of that was getting thrown at the player. And I thought it was some of the worst man managers that I've ever seen. I thought he'd actually killed the player, I've got to be honest with you. And some people say, oh yeah, tough love, he turned Luke Shaw around. I don't think he did, Marino. I think it was just the kid's kind of strength of character and attitude. He just kind of kept his head down, just kept working at his game. But the quality was always there Nathan. And there was an opportunity at one stage. It looked as if Danny Rose, when he was at his peak, was going to head to Old Trafford. And it looked as if Spurs were going to be able to get Luke Shaw, possibly in a swap deal. And I always thought, go and get him, because you'd be getting the better. This lad is the better player than Danny Rose. When he gets over those injury problems, bit of confidence, you know how it goes. I thought he always had those qualities, Luke Shaw. He's a more mature player now. I think he's tightened up on the defensive side to his game, don't get me wrong, but in terms of his strengths defensively and going forward now, very few weaknesses in his game. Very few players get the better of him 1v1 situations, Nathan, just like Wan-Bissaka. But the difference between them going forward, Luke Shaw more productive than Wan-Bissaka. Ball retention's good, makes good decisions, doesn't give the ball away cheaply. He's really reached an area of his game for me, playing with real maturity now. He understands the game, understands his strengths and weaknesses, and he's developed into a really top class accomplished left back.
Where are United then? Because 11 points behind Manchester City, unless City have a Liverpool-esque collapse, they'll go on to win the league. Yeah. And I see already a lot of United supporters looking back at the last few weeks and thinking about Everton and Sheffield United. And if this had happened, they could be right there in a title race. Are they right to think that? Is a couple of little slip-ups, or is there a reason that they're this far behind?
There is a reason, eh? There is the limitation. Now, we're kind of constantly speaking about those kind of limitations. We're speaking about the kind of, you know, the qualities of those two central midfielders, as good as they are defensively. You know, what's their technical abilities? Can they play in tight areas? No, they can't. Are they playmakers as such? Are they going to control the tempo of the game, McTominay and Fred? No. So you've got to make those allowances. You can't have it both ways. You can't look for that kind of rock. Well, you can. I suppose that's the ideal. You're looking for that rock solid defensive side to your game, but also having a kind of real bit of quality and creativity to your game as well. Probably it's not quite there for Manchester United at the moment. But I think Solskjaer recognises that, in all honesty. It just remains to be seen whether he's given the funds to go and strengthen. A lot of talk about Sancho coming in and Haaland. But like I said to you, if I would gladly take top class number six and at least one top class centre-half ahead of any reinforcements up the pitch. I'd sacrifice Haaland and Sancho in forward areas of the pitch to get that top class number six, because that top class number six will free up Pogba and Fernandes in that central area of the pitch, and that'll give them a whole new dimension to their attack and play. And a front three of who's your best Manchester United front three?
Greenwood, Rashford, Cavani now.
Now give me a better front three at the moment in world football.
In world football, well, I'd have Erling Haaland by himself as front three. The match of all three of them.
Front three. My point is, there's not much more. There's a couple there you can make an argument. You could probably say Haaland, Sancho, Dortmund, maybe Royce or whatever. But my point is, I suppose, they're up there. You could say Liverpool front three. Obviously, they've dropped off, but we know the standards they've been at. There's more to come from Greenwood. He's probably going to be the best of the lot. He's an absolute... I think he's going to be a world-class...
But they haven't scored enough goals this season, that front three.
No, they haven't scored enough, but there's more to come. I think Greenwood's going to get better. And like I said, if that axis chains in midfield and you get Pogba and Fernandes on the pitch in those central areas, that's what I'm saying. That's where the goals would come from. The more, not just goals for themselves, but more opportunities for other players as well.
City come into this, 21 straight wins, so I don't know how critical you can be, but it was an unusually flat performance. Particularly Kevin De Bruyne, who was... I know maybe he's just still coming back from injury.
Xbox. Absolute cast on. Joe was right. Letting professionals on their Xboxes till 2 or 3 in the morning. It affects you. Not getting enough good quality sleep. That was a player who's been hammering his Xbox for the last couple of weeks, and eventually I caught up to him. Joe was absolutely right. Obviously, I'm kidding. Look, these players are absolutely human. Kevin De Bruyne in particular, standards that he set. And a couple of injuries as well. I think we take it for granted. Oh, he's back from injury. Yeah, bum, bum. He's got to pick up where you left off. It's not always the case. And he's picked up a lot of, I wouldn't say serious injuries, but not niggles as such, like, you know. So I think we should cut him a little bit of slack. So I've no problem with that whatsoever. But just too many of those performances today. Like five or six quite easily who are below their standards that they've set recently. That was the difference.
Does it change the way you think about them for the rest of the season? And you may not have bought into the hype around they'll go and they'll win everything. Do you look at that performance and think, actually, Champions League, that may be a cause for concern?
No, I think there's that performance today, but it hasn't, you know, but it hasn't been the we haven't seen that week in, week out. This is the exception to the rule.
Did we get carried away with how good they are?
I think there might have been a little bit of that at the start of the game. Spoke about Cancelo early on in the penalty box, trying to drop his shoulder and beat a couple of people. That probably an indication to me is somebody's on, thinks he's on the top. Has been playing well, don't get me wrong, playing very well. But somebody may be getting a little bit too caught up in the hype. And sometimes when you have to put your foot through the ball, that's the right thing to do. You think, well, I'm a better player than that. I'm a footballer. I've been the best player in this team for the past 6 weeks. People expect a little bit more. So I'm going to drop my shoulder now and beat two players inside the penalty box. Now he's lost the ball and Luke Shaw's getting a shot on target. So maybe a little bit of that. I'm sure the manager will be aware of that. He'll get onto the cases of the players and say, look, just a little bit of casualness crept in today. Don't let it happen again. So I'm sure there'll be a reaction from their Manchester City players. And I still think that argument applies in terms of Manchester City winning the quadruple, because I still feel as if in terms of the balance of the team, that wasn't their best team on the pitch today for me. I have Fernandinho in the team ahead of Rodri. I think even there's an argument for Foden coming into the team across the front line ahead of Mahrez or even Sterling or Jesus, one of them. So I think maybe that's where you can slightly improve that team. But I like the balance in the team, the partnership at centre-half. We know they're a lot better today. And I still think the argument is there potentially they can go and win the quadruple. It won't be easy. The league's done. I think Spurs could cause them a problem. Spurs, as if it looks as if they might turn the corner now. That should be absolutely cracking game, the Carling Cup final. But I think they're in great shape in the Champions League because they have that defensive resilience now, that quality in the centre defence that they've never had previously going into this stage of European competition.
A couple of quick points on the earlier games. What the hell has gone wrong for Liverpool? This is unprecedented. We've seen teams struggle to retain the Premier League title, but to go from 3.5 years, 68 games unbeaten at Anfield, to lose 6 in a row at home, not look like threatening to score a goal. Somehow, yeah. Kenny, sum it up.
No, I think, it was mentioned today on the commentary, I was things going from bad to worse, but I don't think it actually does it justice. Like, we're literally saying it's almost gone from, ridiculous to monstrous. Like, I mean, you just can't believe how bad it's got. But I'll be honest with you, Nathan, I don't think it's a case you can look at it and say, oh, how's it kind of come to it? I think there are reasons there. It'd be easy to say, oh, look, there's just no reason for this. This is just crazy. It's not crazy. It's not crazy because they've had the heart of defence ripped out in terms of Van Dijk. It's an obvious thing to say, Gomez. But they haven't been able to find a replacement pairing, not up to that quality, but in terms of maybe the quality required to sustain a Premiership title challenge. That's just been the fact. They had an option to go out and buy big. Mm. They didn't do it. They chose to invest in a young boy from Preston, and Kabak has come in with maybe question marks. It doesn't look as if he's ready yet. Might be potentially going forward, but certainly not the player to come in and elevate that team immediately. So they've left themselves exposed in that area of the pitch.
And that may see you not be in a title race with a relentless Manchester City, but to have as calamitous a collapse as this points to this has become something far bigger than the central defensive problem.
Yeah, so what's happened there is because of that, then they've had to take Fabinho and Henderson out of those central midfield, and they kind of dominate that area of the pitch. They really set the tempo for Liverpool in that central area of the pitch when they both play there. Fabinho's the six and Henderson probably just right side of an eight. They were the two who really kept Liverpool foreign in terms of their tenacity, that kind of high energy, kind of making tackles, starting off the high press, that type of thing. So now you're taking them out of the central area of the pitch and you're having to drop them into different areas of the pitch, particularly centre-half. Fabinho's come out of the team, he's been injured. So now you're disrupting that central area of the pitch. Oh, it's okay, we can get Thiago in, he's a top-class player. Well, yeah, he's a top-class technician. Argument whether he's a top-class player for me, but he's a totally different type of player.
Mm.
And he's a totally different type of player to Fabinho and Henderson. So now you're totally changing... you're totally changing the dynamic in that central midfield area. You're not playing a kind of high energy, kind of high press game now, because you've got a player in central midfield player who can't do that. He's not a particularly good runner, he's not a particularly good athlete, he can't tackle, I don't think he can defend. I think he's a great technician.
I think you said that when they signed him.
Yeah, that's
first.
Right.
And did you expect then when he came in that Liverpool's game, that he wouldn't be expected to do what he's having to try and do, which is, it seems you say, constantly being caught out of position, chasing now, can't tackle.
Well, I didn't expect him to come in. My argument was when he came in, I don't put him in the team. I might have made the point he's the tour choice number six, and I stick by that behind Fabinho and Henderson. I think you've seen the reason why. You could make the argument, oh, he's the best technician, clever in tight areas, working the ball around the corner, kind of little 1-2s. Yeah, absolutely. But when Liverpool turn over possession of the ball and they need somebody to go and counter-press quickly and disrupt the opposition to kind of track a runner, eat up the ground, go and get in contact with the two centre-halves, cover the full-back, get across and double up at the full-backs on both sides of the pitch, he can't do it. So that's what I'm saying. That type of player now in central midfield, because of the reasons that we've said, now they've changed the dynamic in that central mid. Now they're a different type of team. They're not playing the type of football, that rock and roll football that they've played previously. So now the problem's not just the centre-half. Now there's issues in terms of the balance now in central midfield. And I'd even make the argument for Jota, as well as he's played. Him coming into the team, I'm thinking, this is interesting. Is he going to play instead of one of the front three? No, he's going to play with them. So now Liverpool are going to play with a front four. They're going to play with a front three and a number 10. Take your pick wherever they play. So now that changes the shape, the dynamic in midfield. Now you're playing with a two number sixes in centre midfield, which Liverpool have never played with. Now you're playing with different patterns now. Now the whole thing kind of changes. So all these subtle things are going on under the surface, are bubbling out away as well. So when people say to me, not that too many have, like, I don't talk to too many people, obviously. But if they say, ah, oh, forget about it, Van Dijk, Gomez back, just pick up where we left off. Not so easy. Not so easy for me. So that's why I'm fascinated to see how Klopp sees it this summer in terms of recruitment, whether he feels as if, not necessarily because it's an aging squad or people have totally dropped off in terms of performance, where he just feels as if he needs to get back to that Liverpool model, which was so successful, or whether he's going to veer away from it and thinks he can actually be successful, maybe playing a different type of way with the likes of the Thiago into the team, a more technical player. We're playing a front four now with a number 10 as opposed to that midfield three and a front three. So that's what I think is fascinating for me going forward from a Liverpool point of view.
You're the only man I know, if I ask you for your favourite 0-0 draw, you can talk for 20 minutes and give your top 10. You were watching
West Brom Newcastle.
You were watching West Brom Newcastle earlier.
That was your lead-in, like it. I took the bait.
So we had Kieran Clarke on one side. We had Darragh O'Shea on the other side. Is that your starting central defensive pairing for Ireland against Serbia in a couple of weeks' time?
Oh, I wouldn't. I'd have no problems with it whatsoever. I suppose the argument is they haven't played together too often. Kieran hasn't played for some time. He's always quite an experienced player. Probably the best player on the pitch today. Really impressed me. Defended his air, but it didn't surprise me. I think you know the qualities Kieran Clarke has. Kind of very dependable. He's quite aggressive. Doesn't physically impose himself on people. But he's a good reader of the game. Wins his fair share of tackles. Very comfortable on the ball. Defends his air of the pitch very well. Almost a player you look at and think, I can trust him. And Darragh O'Shea's made great strides this season. And the reason I think maybe Darragh, there's a stronger argument for that ahead of some of the other players. And I think an area of his game where he has the advantage is in terms of his distribution from central defence. I think he's the best in terms of distributing the ball out, not only into midfield, but into forward areas of the pitch. He's very accurate over long distances, in particular that big switch of play. Absolutely fantastic. I worked with Darragh like a couple of years ago with the 19s. You could see that. So he's polished his game up. He's probably not the most dynamic of players. We saw that today one or two occasions. Joe Linton just maybe ran him in behind. A little bit kind of one pace. I know what that feeling's like. But his all-round game's very good. And he's very productive in possession of the football. And that's a great attribute to have at international football. And I think in particular with Stephen will appreciate that type of centre-half. Someone with the ability to travel forward into midfield and actually break the lines, punch balls through the lines with his passing. And also that accuracy of delivery over longer distances. So I think he's pushing slowly. He's pushing and pushing even stronger for his starting position. It'd be very interesting to see what Stephen there does for the game. He's got options there. Shane Duffy's actually fit. I know people will say, oh, Shane's fit, he's dropped confidence and all that type of thing. I understand that, but that's not a given. Shane Duffy should come out of the team. Sometimes you got to know your players, their personality, mentally, how strong they are. Can we trust Shane Duffy to put all those kind of disappointments that he's felt this season, frustrations of Celtic, to the side and kind of refocus and put in the type of performance that we need? Stephen Kenny might decide, yeah, I do. I trust him. You might have those conversations with Shane and say, do you know what? You're ready. You're my captain. I'm sticking with you. And that might be the right decision. And then the decision might be who plays alongside him. But that's a decision for the people on the inside, Stephen and his support staff.
Kenny, great stuff as always.
Nice one.
The OTB Podcast Network.